Welcome back to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. We are joined by Sue Ball, a long-time climate activist involved with the Geelong Renewables Not Gas campaign and a member of Socialist Alliance's National Executive. We've got Sue on to talk about the energy and gas crisis. And Sue's written a couple of great articles on the topic for Green Left. So thank you for joining us, Sue.
Hi, thank you.
So a few weeks ago, we mentioned one of your articles, in fact, the gas crisis is a fraud. And one of the points that you were making in that article was obviously that the gas crisis appears to be more like another incidence of price gouging from the private energy sector. Does that hold true for the energy crisis in general? And kind of can you give an overview of the situation in regards to the companies involved?
Yeah, absolutely no question. I mean, I'm afraid that the whole energy crisis, I think, is a fraud. But I also think that there's an enormous amount of gouging that goes on every level. But in this particular case, there's four main companies in Australia that are involved with gas in terms of the exportation of it. And they're BHP, Exxon, Shell, Santos and Origin. And they are making multi-billion dollars worth of profit out of gas, and indeed they're part of the process, of course, of the gouging, which means that what they're doing is that the shortage internationally has meant that they can sell gas at top dollar, ignoring the needs of the domestic market. So they're exporting where they can make huge profits. And bad luck that the gas is found on Australian territory and that we need it in particular in Victoria because we're the biggest gas-using state. We're the biggest gas-using state at this point in time. And we need the gas for domestic purposes, but too bad we're not actually significant in terms of the profit that they can make. So that's really the background of what's going on at the moment.
Oh, Sue, it's Chloe here as well, doing this interview with Ari. I guess there has been a bit of movement on this, on the climate issue from the Albanese government. What are they actually proposing to do about this crisis?
Well, they've been able to intervene through AEMO, which is the government-supported body, the Australian Energy the Australian Energy Group, and they've been able to intervene and actually get the gas companies to hold back, to some extent, the increase in their charges to the Australian community. But that's only seen as a very short-term fix. Like the Albanese governments and AEMO themselves have said that they will return to a free market situation. So whilst there has been a short-term intervention to keep the gas from hitting the top dollar that was expected on the Australian market, that's actually only seen as a short-term fix. There are no long-term strategies in place to provide for a fairer share at the domestic level.
In your more recent article for Green Left, Energy Crisis, Time to Talk Seriously About Public Ownership, you point out that while some people are calling for a windfall profit tax, further left voices are kind of coming out against the general failed policies of privatization. Can you give like a bit of a background on the kind of the privatization situation with the energy market and I mean, it's probably obvious to a lot of people at this point why it's failed, but maybe some of the less obvious reasons why it's a failed policy.
Yeah, well, so you've got to sort of go back to the 1990s to have a look at what's happened in Australia. And Victoria is probably the most interesting, well, the most dire in some ways. So if you look at the situation in Victoria, and you know, to be honest, the price range that was going to happen in New South Wales and Queensland was worse. But in Victoria, we've got a much higher usage of gas. And it's an historical anomaly, if you like, in that gas was very cheap in Victoria originally because of Bass Strait. But so if you look at the whole history of what's gone on here, you see that the Kennett government of the 1990s decided to basically offload all of the gas and coal-producing companies, which are all government-owned, and sell them off relatively cheaply into private hands. So that's been the background here. Now, this happens in a context of neoliberalism. So what you see worldwide from the 80s onwards is this idea that the market will get a better price for the consumer if we put everything into private hands. So that's been the argument. I mean, for those of us on the left, we knew damn well that it was just a way of actually increasing the profits of the private sector.
Yeah.
But that's all it's ever been about. So here you see the Kennett government selling off all the gas fields, the coal fields, gas, etc. Now, of course, on one level, you look at it and go, well, you know, we don't really want brown coal anymore anyway. So there was that was sort of one of the debates that happened at the time. But all of us on the left knew damn well that it was just a get-rich-quick scheme for big business.
Mm.
And what it's meant is that right around Australia there's been some level of handing over energy to the private sector and therefore in actual fact increasing the amount that people like ourselves pay, receive, but at the same time taking it completely out of public control so that, you know, at no stage could we, the public, say, well, look, we want to get out of brown coal and we want you to put forward transitional plans that mean that the workers in those industries get a good deal as you get rid of those industries, you shut down those industries, and you transition them into renewable industries. So we lost that control almost completely in Victoria in the 1990s and to some extent right around the country.
You were going to ask a follow-up question?
Well, I mean, Kennett did privatise basically everything in Victoria. It's been a lot of problems. But following up on your article, as socialists, we do call for nationalization of the energy industry. And putting aside the political situation on that issue, how realistic is it? And like, what would the practical steps be that could be taken in that direction?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, really, that's the question of the minute, isn't it? Like, on the left, you know, we're always accused of being pie in the sky. You've got these great ideas about people owning things and democratically sharing and da-da-da. We've always been accused of that.
Mm.
But I think that what this has shown, like, this crisis has shown, first of all, the fact that Labor did decide to intervene shows that governments can.
Mm.
So they didn't intervene for very long, but they chose that it can be done. So that's one thing. That's one, you know, one thing that just shows that it's possible. But the second thing that shows is that you had all sorts of bourgeois commentators like Ken Henry coming out and saying, oh, well, look, these companies now are getting this massive profit. At the very least, that profit should be returned to the public and be reinvested for our benefit. So, or to bring, you know, prices down, you know, whatever it happens to be.
Mm.
So that's another thing. So it's a very conservative bureaucrat, person with a bureaucratic background saying, well, look, you know, that profit actually belongs to the people. So that's another thing. So what you're beginning to see is conservative forces or bourgeois forces saying, you say, well, actually, this isn't fair. It's got to come back into public hands. Some level of it's got to come back into public hands. So you see that. So the reason why I mention those is that that's a sign that this can be done. The governments can do this. Now, from our point of view, just to bring it back into public hands isn't enough. So if you consider that all, you know, coal, for instance, in Victoria once was owned by the government, like it was owned by the various, sometimes corporatised, but it was still publicly owned. That's good, but that's not enough.
Mm.
Because what we want is that it's owned, yes, by the public, but that we have a democratic control over it, which we never had previously. So in the past, these were public corporations but they did not operate for the benefit of the workers or the community. So Hazelwood's your classic example. When the company that owned it, Engie, began to, you know, really lose a lot of money because it was going to require a huge upgrade, they basically just shut it down. Too bad that it had caused major pollution problems for the community. You know, it had a fire, the longest industrial fire in Victorian history, and so it owed huge amounts on that level to the community. That there had been numerous generations of workers working there and that they got almost nothing when it shut down. Too bad about that. And so we'd say, yes, bring it into public hands, but let's have it democratically controlled by workers in the community. And that's the difference with what people like us are saying and what, you know, the Ken Henrys, for instance, of the world might, well, he doesn't even say this, but what those bourgeois forces are saying. And I think it's possible. And that's why I wrote that article. And many, many people like us think that that's possible. It can be done, even in society as it is now.
Closing Hazelwood, just reading an article by Green Left a few years ago, it actually slashed Victoria's climate pollution by 12 million tonnes, which is about, I think you said, about 10%. It's ridiculous.
Like, you know, brown coal is just filthy.
Yeah.
Sadly, the Latrobe Valley contributed massively to the emissions that were, you know, being ignored at the time. But, you know, it's filthy. There's nothing that justifies continuing to use brown coal.
And maybe to divert from our plan slightly, you mentioned that the left does get criticized often as having this sort of pie-in-the-sky idea, you know, talking about transition to 100% renewable energy or about democratic control of these systems or whatever. But the alternative often seems to me way less realistic, I guess. Like, Peter Dutton at the moment has very much switched to pushing nuclear energy, and that is fairly common on the right, or especially on the sort of the slightly more climate-aware right. But that sort of process would take ages to set up, wouldn't it? And it's not like it's actually clean.
No! That's the shocking thing. Like, every expert that you read talks about a 10 to 20-year start-up for a nuclear industry. And, in fact, I heard Richard Miles talking the other day. You know, he's the defence minister these days. He's also the local member here in Cryo. And that they're all very worried that this AUKUS agreement, which is for nuclear-powered submarines, they're really worried about, well, where's that, the industry going to come from to get this submarine up and happening? Now, you know, we don't want the bloody submarine in the first place, but, you know, let's not even go there. But yes, so without a nuclear industry, can they actually get these subs happening? And you can tell that even people like Miles are going, I don't know if this is a goer, because they know damn well it's a 10 to 20-year start-up for any aspect of the nuclear industry. And that's huge amounts of money that's just invested in, you know, as we know, an industry that is terrifying. Like, the prospects of that industry here and the waste from that industry, just the amount of poisoning that happens from places like Roxby Downs alone, in terms of the environment and in terms of the miners who work there, it's actually unknown because they refuse to measure it, but we know that it is a really dangerous industry and people die regularly from this industry.
Yeah.
So you've got both sides, the poison chalice on one hand and also a huge amount of money and years to just actually get it going.
Yeah. I've seen people talking generally on the kind of basically on the question of why does conservatives tend to push nuclear energy? And the point that a lot of people make is that you can't mine wind or sunshine, but you can certainly mine uranium.
Wow. So, profit.
Yeah,
see, this
exactly.
is the whole thing. You know, and this is why renewables are not necessarily a popular alternative to big business, because they can't see the profits that they can make out of it on this giant scale. In fact, the only real renewable profits that they're actually interested in at the moment are the hydrogen ones. Because hydrogen, involves, all this double handling, essentially. So they're all, you find so many of them, and they're all talking about hydrogen. And I think it's because there's far more profits involved.
Yeah. Well, I think we're probably coming toward the end of the interview here. Did you have any final thoughts, anything else you wanted to add?
Look, just a quick one. I really do think that we've got to put our heads together and start putting forward proposals about public ownership and what it would really mean. Because I think we're going to get a much greater hearing now, and it won't just be about energy, it'll be about all sorts of things. And I think we've got to inspire workers and unions and the environmental movement into working together to work at how we can do these things and how we can make demands that can be won now.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Sue. It's been really good. And I expect to have you on again to talk more about these sorts of things and nationalisation and that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Yep. See ya. Okay, bye-bye.